probably sneak into them and gorge on all the food until she got sick. It was still dangerous for her to eat too much. "Honey, do you want to go outside?" I asked, moving to stand beside her, hoping I could distract her. It seemed torturous not to feed her, but the doctors had assured us that keeping her on her schedule was the best thing for her. She glared at me and shook her head, pointing to the refrigerator again. This time she smacked it.
"Food! I want to eat!"
We were one step away from a full-on meltdown. Suddenly, Christopher broke into a goofy dance and scooped her into his arms before she had a chance to protest. He swung her around. "Whee!" She looked longingly over her shoulder at the fridge, but he twirled her again.
"Whee!" I exclaimed this time. "Look how fast you're going!"
Slowly, a smile spread over her face. Christopher kept swinging her. Finally, she started giggling and stopped trying to look at the refrigerator. I let out the breath I'd been holding. We just passed our first parenting test. But things didn't go as smoothly during our visit the next day. We were sprawled out on the living room floor coloring when she suddenly started screaming. They were angry, violent screams, not scared screams, rage screams. There were no tears. She wouldn't let us get near her. Every time we inched closer, she screamed louder.
"It's okay, Janie. There's nothing to be afraid of," Christopher said.
His words had no effect on her. It was like she couldn't hear him. She was somewhere else. She panted like she couldn't get enough air. Christopher reached out to bring her close to him, and she sank her teeth into his forearm. He yelled and jerked back instinctively, pushing her away. She howled. I crouched in front of her.
"Honey, it's..."
Her spit hit my face before I finished my sentence. I wiped it off with the back of my hand and turned to Christopher. He looked as lost as I felt. She flipped herself onto her back and beat her fists against the wooden floor maniacally. Before we knew what was happening, she flung her head back and smashed it on the floor. It made a loud crack.
"Oh my God!"
Christopher grabbed her and wrestled his arms around her to hold her in a tight bear hug. She let out another wail and headbutted him in the nose. He let her go, and she threw herself back down on the floor. Within seconds, she was banging her head again.
"She's going to knock herself out," I said. "You get behind her and hold her. I'll grab her legs."
He held her from behind so she couldn't headbutt him again. I held her legs down with my arms. She fought against us, her small body rigid with rage, but we refused to let go. I was afraid she was going to pop her hips out of socket with the way she tried to kick me again and again. It felt like hours before she stopped fighting and her body went limp. It was finally over, but we were afraid to let go. It took another few minutes before we released our hold, and she burst into tears immediately, her body shaking with heaving sobs. I ran to the bathroom down the hallway and grabbed a washcloth, running it under the faucet. I held it on her forehead like she was feverish, hoping the coolness would alleviate some of the heat flowing through her body. We tried everything to comfort her, taking turns holding her and rubbing her back. Christopher tried distracting her with videos on his phone, the ones with gorillas that usually made her laugh, but nothing worked. She cried until the visit was over and we had to take her back to the hospital. She wailed the entire drive and was still carrying on when we left her in her room.
"Wow, that was so intense," Christopher said as we drove away.
Perspiration marks lined the armpits of his favorite t-shirt.
"Have you ever seen her like that?" I asked.
"I've seen her freak out before, but I had no idea it could last for so long. The nurses talk about how long she screams sometimes, but they never said it went on for hours. Do you think it's too much for her too soon? He asked.
He was obviously shaken. I reached out and grabbed his hand. I think it's going to be a tough transition for her, and this is probably just the beginning.
I don't even know why she freaked out. I mean, one second we were coloring, and the next minute, she just freaked out for no reason. I didn't even tell her no or anything.
His eyes were filled with questions, searching for answers. I squeezed his hand. There's probably a lot going on inside her that we don't even know about.
It's just that I can usually calm her down. What's going to happen if I can't calm her down?
Worry flooded his face. Thankfully, we don't have to do this alone. Janie went to so many different therapies each day, I didn't know how she had time for anything else. Each of them had given us a detailed summary of her care. Rhonda told me she's going to give us a bunch of sensory toys that she uses with kids who've been severely abused. She says they work great at helping them learn to self-soothe. She's got stacks of other resources for us, too. All kinds of different therapeutic games and books. Rhonda was the chief psychologist at the hospital, and she worked with Janie for 2 hours every day.
Do you really think they'll help?
Absolutely, I said, trying to be strong for him, despite the fear gnawing in my gut.
Case number 5243. Interview. Piper Goldstein. The sun hit my eyes, making me squint, but I didn't care. It felt good to be outside, even if it was only going to be for 5 minutes. For a second, I wished I smoked. At least then I would have had a valid reason for asking them to let me step outside for a minute. Instead, I'd just looked shady when I'd asked if I could get some air. They'd looked at me suspiciously, but it wasn't like they could say no. "Let's make it quick, though, so we can finish this thing up," Ron had said, as if we were almost finished. I hoped we were, but I doubted it. We hadn't even gotten to any of the hard stuff yet. They'd spent way too much time on the Bowers' first home visit. Hannah had called me afterward, worried and frazzled, wondering if they'd gotten in over their heads. I hadn't told the officers that, but they hadn't asked the question either. Besides, I knew what they'd think if I told them, and it wasn't even like that. She had just been concerned. She was always so much more practical about Janie than Christopher. "Is there anything we can do to make things better for her?" she had asked that day. "Just keep doing what you're doing, but honestly, it's going to take a long time for the psychological and emotional healing to happen. That part isn't going to start until she's settled in a more permanent home. Even if she's not consciously aware of it, at some level she still doesn't feel safe. No kid feels safe when they don't have a home. How are the prospects looking? There are a lot of people who want her." I'd rubbed my forehead just thinking about the hundreds of pages of paperwork I had to go through. "But it's a good problem to have." "Still no luck tracking down any of her family members?" "Nothing worth reporting," I had said. It wasn't exactly a lie. Telling her about visiting Becky's mother in jail would have served no purpose except to upset her more, and nothing good had come out of our visit anyway. We started with family members whenever we needed a permanent placement for a child, and Becky's mother, Sue Watson, was the only relative we'd found. She had a criminal record spanning the last 2 decades, and was in Fodge County Jail awaiting her trial after pleading not guilty to her 3rd DUI charge and reckless driving. I'd gone to see her last week. Sue was so obese, her folds had slid over the aluminum chair, since her fat was the loose kind. She had worn the characteristic orange jumper. Usually women swam in them, but hers had hugged her body tightly. Her hair had been a frizzy mess, long and bushy, like it had been years since a brush had passed through it. She had wrapped her arms around her wide chest and glared at me. "Who are you?" Her teeth were as rotten as Janie's had been. I'm Piper Goldstein. We spoke on the phone. I'm the social worker who's been assigned to your granddaughter Janie's case.
What's Janie need a social worker for? She'd asked, eyeing the other visitors in the packed room like they might be able to hear. But there hadn't been any reason to worry. Visiting hours were short, and nobody cared about any other visit but their own.
The courts assign a social worker when a child is in need of protective care, I'd explained, like I'd done the first time we'd spoken on the phone.
What's that got to do with me?
I'd hated to even bring it up, but I hadn't had a choice. The state insisted we pursue family care if at all possible. Sometimes it worked, but more often than not it didn't. Dysfunctional parenting usually spanned generations, and most of the time, the family member didn't do any better than the parents. In Janie's case, I'd known she wouldn't stand a chance with any of her extended family, because Sue had been arrested more times than Becky. We're trying to determine the best placement for Janie, and thought you might be able to help us find the information we need to do that. She'd leaned forward on the table.
What kind of information you looking for?
Anything you might be able to tell us about Becky and Janie. She'd snorted.
I haven't seen that child in years.
Janie or Becky?
Both.
Did you used to see them frequently?
I raised Janie.
I'd picked up my pen. This had been new information. Can you tell me more about that? I had asked, sounding just like a reporter.
Becky never wanted that baby. Only reason she even had her was because she waited too long to go in and get it taken care of.
What about the father? Sue had burst out laughing.
Father? Becky can't keep her damn legs shut. Who knows who that baby's daddy is? Definitely not Becky. She don't have a clue.
She'd snorted.
I brought them two home from the hospital to stay with me. I thought I'd give Becky another chance. Maybe give her time to get off that nasty junk, but I should have known better.
She'd rolled her eyes.
She was back smoking within 3 weeks. Didn't even last a month with her baby. Took off one night and never came home. Left me with the damn baby to take care of.
How long was she gone? I'd asked. She'd laughed again. This laugh had been so deep that it had shaken her belly underneath her jumpsuit.
She didn't come back until Janie was almost two.
And Janie was with you that entire time? Nobody else? She'd nodded. Why did Becky come back for her?
She'd gotten herself clean, been in some kind of program for 6 months. I gave her Janie, but there's no way I was letting that girl back in my house.
I had scribbled down the timeline. What was Janie like when she was a baby?
She never slept. You know how they always be saying babies sleep all the time? Not Janie.
She'd shaken her head.
She came into the world woke, and she stayed woke.
You mean she was colicky? She'd looked puzzled.
What's that?
It's when babies cry a lot. Babies with colic usually don't sleep much.
Oh, hell no. That ain't what she was like. She never cried. She just stayed woke, like I said. She just laid there staring at the ceiling. She didn't want nothing to do with me. Didn't even care I was her grandma. How are you supposed to care about a baby who don't care nothing for you?
I don't know. That must have been really hard for you. She'd shrugged.
Oh, well, I just figured you can't pick babies. Sometimes you just get a bad one.
So what'd you do?
I just let her do whatever she want till she got bigger, but then she turned even worser.
What do you mean?
Couldn't get her to do anything you wanted her to. She'd freak out if you told her no. That girl would kick me, try and bite me. If she couldn't bite me, she'd bite her own self. Craziest thing I ever seen.
She'd nodded her head, agreeing with herself and gaining momentum as she spoke.
Then she started taking off her diaper and peeing all over everything. Not just in the room. Everywhere in the damn house. She'd drop a dookie whenever she feel like it. Get all mad and make herself throw up. I was like, nuh-uh, ain't no child gonna act all crazy like that, messing up my house. That's when I had to start whooping her good. That's what I did with all my kids.
She'd locked her eyes on mine pointedly.
I had a right to whoop my children when they got out of hand, just like Becky got a right to do the same to Janie when she was getting out of hand.
Everyone who beat their kids had an excuse, and it was usually because they thought it was their right to do it. People even used Bible verses to justify beating their children. I couldn't count the number of parents who'd quoted the "spare the rod, spoil the child" verse to me. I hadn't bothered trying to change her mind. She'd be locked away from children for a long time. Were you concerned that there was something wrong with Janie? She'd leaned forward again and lowered her voice, whispering like we were best friends.
You ever look in her eyes? Those eyes turn black as night. Sometimes I just had to smack her upside the head just to get her eyes to look blue again. You know what I mean?
She'd laughed, but I was pretty sure she was serious.
I would have just got rid of her. Believe me, I thought about it. But then Becky came back. She'd gotten herself clean and wanted Janie again. I was like, hell yeah, take her.
When was the last time you saw them? Her forehead had creased as she'd tried to remember.
2 years, maybe three.
And what was Becky like then?
Crazy as ever. Strung out again and talking about taking Janie to church so she could have the pastor pray over her again.
I know you said that you didn't know who Janie's father was, but were there any men in Becky's life? We had to track down the biological father or any other male figure who might have custodial rights. Even if they weren't around, we had to give them an opportunity to take Janie. I'd never seen it happen. Deadbeat dads didn't resurrect themselves to show up for their kids when they needed it. It was just another box I had to check off my form.
No idea.
Were there any men who'd hurt Becky in the past? She'd raised her eyebrows.
Were there any who didn't?
13. Christopher Bauer. I was so excited to bring Janie home, but the sheer magnitude of the task at hand pummeled me when we walked through the front door, and I froze. The entryway stretched out in front of me, leading to our rustic living room with the burnt orange accent wall I'd insisted on. The sun from the bay windows drenched the room in light, illuminating every piece we'd so thoughtfully and lovingly designed, but nothing felt safe or familiar. Everything looked different, even the artwork. Suddenly, all this time opened up in front of us. Hannah and I had each taken 3 weeks of vacation to be with Janie until they matched her with a family. But now that we had her home, what were we supposed to do with her? Hannah took one look at my face and read what I couldn't say. "Why don't we all get something to eat?" she asked. Even though food was a touchy issue with Janie, it was the one thing guaranteed to make her happy, and we'd purposefully scheduled our arrival to coincide with her snack time. Hannah stretched her hand out to me, and I grasped it, grateful for her lead. We filed into the kitchen. The rest of our house was homey and inviting, filled with our down-to-earth style and lived-in looks, but the kitchen was a different story. It was set up with purpose and function in mind. The kitchen was supposed to be the heart of the home and the place people spent the most time, but not with us, since both of us hated to cook. I would be perfectly content ordering takeout every night or heating microwave meals, but Hannah insisted on cooking, so it was all designed to make things easy for her. There was open shelving so that she knew exactly where everything was, and it was easy to grab. We had set up a whiteboard on the refrigerator so Janie could see when she was going to eat, just like at the hospital. Her timer was on the kitchen island. We had bought the same one the nurses had used. Our goal was to keep everything like the hospital so we could maintain her routines. We hoped her adoptive parents would do the same. Hannah unlocked the refrigerator. Janie let go of my hand and ran to it. Her eyes grew big as she took it all in. She'd probably never seen a full refrigerator before, and ours was stacked. It was all neatly organized and labeled in storage containers.
Jiggany, I want you to know that this is your food.
Hannah waved her hand around, pointing to each shelf. All of it. You will always have enough to eat in our house. We are always going to feed you, okay? She was too busy eyeing all the food and fingering the Tupperware full of colorful sliced fruit, Hannah's work, to respond. She pointed to the strawberries.
That, I want that, she said.
Hannah pulled out the strawberries.
And that, and that, and that.
She pointed so quickly it was hard to tell what she was pointing at. Hannah laughed and pulled out some cheese along with a few slices of salami.
How about we put some of these on crackers?
Janie's smile grew even wider, and I finally felt like I could breathe. I took a seat at the island. I had only sat on the stools when we were deciding which ones to purchase because we rarely ate in the kitchen. We usually carried our meals into the living room to watch whatever show we were currently binging on. A smile tugged at the corners of my mouth as Janie crawled onto my lap. Maybe we didn't spend time in the kitchen because we'd never had a reason to before. Hannah lined the island counter with food and pulled the other stool closer to us. I reached over and rubbed Hannah's back as she stared at Janie in awe. Janie shoveled food in her mouth. Hannah flashed me a smile, her eyes filled with happy tears. All my nerves had been for nothing. It had been an amazing day. It had gone better than I could have expected. The three of us were snuggled on Janie's bed reading books together. We'd been in the same position for over an hour.
One more,
Janie said after Hannah finished the book. She loved reading. It was one of her favorite activities.
You promised you'd go to sleep if we read Whistle for Willie.
Hannah closed the book and gave her a pointed look. We'd already read it three times. It was past 10 o'clock. She stuck her lower lip out.
I don't want to sleep.
Christopher and I are going to be right outside your door if you need us, okay? If you need anything, all you have to do is call us, and we'll come, I said, rubbing my hand across her cheek. She nodded obligingly. We each gave her a kiss on the forehead. Then we laid her down on the bed, pulled the covers up to her chin, and tucked her stuffed animals around her. She smiled up at us.
Good night,
she said sweetly. Good night, Janie, we sang back in unison. We left her door open a crack and plopped down on the couch in the family room outside her room. The glow from the nightlights edging the hallway cast shadows on the wall. I put my feet up on the coffee table and let out a deep sigh. We'd no sooner settled on the couch when Janie bounced out of her room carrying her dinosaur.
Hiya,
she said.
What you doing?
I looked at Hannah, and we both tried not to laugh. We're resting, just like you're supposed to be doing, I said. I took her hand and led her back to her room, where I tucked her in like we'd just done. It wasn't so funny when she popped out of bed as soon as I sat down again. We repeated the routine for the next 2 hours. Hannah and I took turns bringing her back to bed and laying her down. It grew more and more difficult each time, and eventually we were practically dragging her there. By 1 o'clock, we were both exhausted.
Why don't you just lie down with her?
Hannah asked.
She'll probably go to sleep if you're in there with her.
I know, but Piper was adamant about not sleeping with her. Piper had stressed the importance of letting her sleep alone because otherwise it would be harder for her to leave when it was time. We were trying to facilitate a smooth transition, not make it more difficult.
The first night isn't going to hurt anything, and she's clearly not going to go to sleep in there alone,
Hannah said. I shrugged. I guess it can't hurt. Hannah gathered blankets from the linen closet in the hallway.
What are you doing?
Janie asked, coming out of her room again.
Christopher is going to sleep on the floor of your bedroom. Will that help you sleep? She asked.
She tried to keep her tone light, but I could hear the exhaustion in her voice. Janie clapped, her face beaming with excitement.
Yes!
I helped Hannah carry the blankets into her room, and I made up a pallet on Janie's floor while Hannah went and grabbed a pillow from our bedroom. Janie, lie down and go to sleep, I said. She flopped down on her bed without a word.
Good night,
Hannah whispered, handing me the pillow before tiptoeing out of the room and turning off the light. I lay on the floor waiting for my eyes to adjust to the darkness.
Slowly, her room came into view. Her small twin-size bed was pushed up against the wall on the right side, and we'd put a rail on the other side of it to keep her from falling out. The comforter was bright yellow with huge pink flowers stamped all over it. Her favorite stuffed animals from the hospital lined her bed. A circular rug with purple and blue stripes filled the center of the room. There was so much we'd wanted to get her, but it didn't make sense to fill her room with stuff when she was only going to be with us for a short time. I strained to hear the sounds of her breathing and listened for the weird clicking sound she made in the back of her throat whenever she slept. It seemed like forever before I heard it, but I finally did, and my body slowly relaxed. I closed my eyes and fell asleep immediately. A sharp smack to my forehead jolted me awake. My eyes snapped open. Janie hovered over me, holding one of her toy trains in her hand. I rubbed my head. There was a lump forming where she'd hit me. "Janie, did you hit me with your train?" I asked with surprise. My head throbbed in the spot where she'd hit me. Her face was blank, emotionless, an expression I'd never seen her wear before. "You cannot hit me. It hurts when you hit me." She just stared at me in the dark. The night light cast an eerie shadow on her face. She raised her arm like she was going to hit me again. I grabbed her arm. "Give me the train," I said.
"No!"
she screamed and pulled her arm free.
"Janie, give me the train. You can't hit people with your toys."
I kept my voice steady. She shook her head.
"You need to get back in your bed, and I don't want you to take your train with you because you hit me with it."
Her eyes narrowed to slits, her pint-sized body full of challenge. In one swift movement, she threw the train at me and took off, bolting out the door. I threw off my blankets and chased after her. She ran into the family room and tore the cushions off the couch, screaming at the top of her lungs. Hannah raced out of our bedroom.
"What's going on?"
she asked as she watched Janie tear through the room.
"I think she had a nightmare," I said.
Hannah ran toward her as she grabbed the candles on the coffee table and smashed them onto the floor.
"Janie, stop!"
Her face was contorted in rage. She ripped off her clothes, shaking in her diaper. Her fists clenched at her sides. She eyed the room, looking for something else to destroy. Hannah stepped cautiously toward her, like Janie was a feral cat. She crouched down in front of her.
"It's okay, honey. You're okay," she said softly.
She grabbed Janie, encircling her small body with her arms. Janie kicked and screamed against her. Suddenly, she plunged her teeth into Hannah's arm, just like she'd done to me before. Hannah yelled and instinctively let go. Janie took off again, this time running into the kitchen. We followed her. She had flipped over one of the bar stools and was standing in front of the refrigerator, pounding on it. She grew even more frustrated when the refrigerator wouldn't open and threw herself down on the floor. She flipped around, and before we knew it, she was bashing her head violently against the floor. We rushed to her side. Rhonda had instructed us on the importance of keeping her from hurting herself during her tantrums and showed us some holding techniques.
"Grab her,"
Hannah said, lurching into action. She tried to grab Janie's legs, but Janie writhed and moved around, making it almost impossible to grab her and keep her still. It was easier for me to grab her upper body and twist her arms behind her back, the way we'd practiced with Rhonda. Janie strained against us. She growled and grunted, alternating between screams. It was hard to believe we weren't hurting her, but Rhonda had assured us it was a safe hold. We stayed in our position for an hour before she was finally still. Not asleep, but still. The fight had left her body. I scooped her up and carried her to her room. I placed her on the bed, and she lay there motionless, stared at her ceiling.
"Do you think she's all right?" Hannah asked. "Should we take her back to the hospital?"
I eyed the clock. It was 4:30.
"I don't know."
Hannah rested her hand on Janie's forehead.
"It's okay, Janie. You're safe."
Janie didn't move or respond. It was as if she hadn't heard her. We crawled onto the bed with her, resting against the wall. I took one of her small hands in mine and held Hannah's hand with the other. We sat that way until the sun came up.
14. Hannah Bauer. Allison waved to me from a spot in the corner. and I made my way through the crowded coffee shop over to her. She jumped up and hugged me before sitting back down and sliding my latte across the table. "Okay, you have 1 hour to tell me everything. Go." Janie had been with us for 5 days, and I hadn't talked to Allison since her first night. We'd texted, but even that was minimal. I didn't even know where to begin. I took a sip of my coffee. "I'm pretty sure this is the first time I've rested since we brought her home." We'd assumed that if we mimicked the hospital structure, Janie would respond to it in the same way that she'd done there, but it hadn't been the case. She screamed and cried for hours. Most of our days were spent trying to console her. Her doctors and therapy team had warned us about her episodes, but it was different once you were in them yourself. "She has fits every day, and they can go on for hours. I'm not even exaggerating when I say hours, and there's nothing you can do to calm her down. I'm continually amazed at how much rage can come out of such a little girl. She's got that frothing at the mouth kind of rage, and you just have to sit with her during it and restrain her if she starts banging her head. I hate holding her down, but we have to do it to keep her safe." "What gets her so upset?" I shrugged. "We never really know what triggers her. Certain things are a given, like taking away her food or being told no, but most of the time we have no idea." Allison's face filled with sadness. "That sounds terrible. It's pretty awful for her right now. She gets overstimulated really easily, and she's hyper-aware, so she jumps and plugs her ears every time a car goes by. Tuesday was one of her worst days since it was trash day. Most of the day was spent trying to coax her out from underneath the bed. Oh, and she's decided she doesn't want to wear clothes anymore. She scratches and claws at them like they're burning her skin. We spent the first 2 days getting her dressed over and over again because she kept ripping them off." I laughed. "Now we just let her run around in her diaper." "Her diaper? I thought I told you she wasn't potty trained?" I could have sworn I had. They had put her in diapers in the hospital, and she'd been content running around in them ever since. She wasn't bothered by her soiled diapers even when they were packed with feces. If it weren't for the smell, we wouldn't have noticed, because she never complained about it or told us she'd gone. Urinating was the same way. She'd sit in her mess all day. Allison shook her head. "Yeah, she has no idea how to use the toilet. At least she's good about changing her diapers, though. She lies right down on the floor and raises her legs for one of us to change her. There are so many things she doesn't know how to do. Like, she doesn't know how to hold silverware. Isn't it weird that holding silverware is a learned skill?" Allison laughed. "What? It's not all that weird when you have kids." Her eyes widened in horror. She reached across the table and grabbed both my hands. "I'm so sorry, Hannah. I'm such an idiot. It just came out of my mouth. I wasn't even..." I interrupted her. "Stop. It's okay. Really it is." I gave her a convincing smile. "You know how you used to say motherhood was a world of conflicting emotions?" She nodded. "I get it now. I mean, I said I did before, but now I do in a way that I don't think you can understand unless you have kids yourself. Like, last night after the dinner battle finally ended, we were all exhausted and frustrated, but as soon as we got Janie in the bath and started splashing around with her toys, it was all forgotten." Allison took a bite of her muffin, chewing quickly before talking. "You're going to have such a hard time when she leaves." "Thanks for the vote of confidence," I smiled, tossing a napkin at her. "You are, and you know it." She shook her head. "Of course I'm attached. I'm not going to deny that. But it's actually been good for me. It really has in a lot of ways." She tilted her head at me, skeptical still. How so? Before Janie, I was thinking about giving up on my dream of being a mother. I didn't tell you that, but I was. As much as I wanted to be a mother, I didn't think I could stand to get my hopes up another time and end up disappointed. But Janie's made me realize that I don't want to give up on it. I can't ever give up, because no amount of disappointment is worth giving up on what it feels like to be a mom. She gave me a taste of it, and I know I'll never be satisfied until I get to enjoy the experience.
15. Christopher Bauer. I watched as the man, Carl, squeezed Janie's cheeks playfully. "Don't do that. She doesn't like her face touched," I wanted to call out. It was so hard not to say anything. All of this was so painful to watch, but I couldn't walk away. I couldn't just leave Janie with a stranger. I didn't care if the stranger had been screened and thoroughly investigated by the Department of Children's Services. His wife, Joyce, stood next to the bookshelf in the living room talking to Hannah, but Hannah's eyes were glued to Janie and Carl, just like mine. She didn't trust him any more than I did. It didn't matter that they looked harmless in their worn jeans and tucked-in T-shirts, but they weren't doing things the way Janie liked. They weren't in tune with her. Carl still hadn't noticed that she flinched each time he spoke because it was too loud. Janie looked back and forth between Hannah and me, chewing on her thumbnail, something she only did when she was uncomfortable.
"Janie, sweetie, do you want to come over here and talk to Joyce?" Hannah said, right as I was about to create a similar diversion.
I grinned. She wanted to rescue Janie as badly as me. Janie nodded and quickly walked over to Hannah. Joyce knelt in front of her before she reached her.
"Do you like playing outside?"
Joyce asked. She was in her early 50s, slightly on the heavy side, and wore a long red cardigan, despite the heat today. Janie froze. It had been like this for over an hour, and I wasn't sure how much more I could take. These people might have looked good on paper, but they were not good with her in person. Hannah scooped Janie up, and she laid her head on Hannah's shoulder.
"I think she's overtired today," Hannah said, looking apologetic. "Maybe we should set up a visit for another time."
Joyce huffed, clearly offended. I shook Carl's hand. "It was nice to meet you."
"Likewise. I'm sure we'll be in touch," he said.
He seemed like a nice enough man, just not the right match for Janie. I walked over to Joyce and put my arm around Hannah's shoulders.
"It was nice to meet you as well, Joyce."
"It really was,"
Hannah said. It sounded genuine if you didn't know her like I did. I excused myself and headed to the backyard, where I walked to the far corner. I didn't want to take the chance of someone overhearing me. I called Piper, pacing back and forth, as I waited for her to answer. Relief washed over me at the sound of her voice.
"That was awful," I blurted out, skipping all the small talk. "They looked like they walked out of a car insurance commercial."
Piper laughed.
"Really? They were that bad?"
"Yes. Janie froze every time they talked to her." She'd been that way from their first hello. She'd refused to move from her spot behind me during introductions. It had taken over 10 minutes just to get her to show her face.
"In their defense, she probably would have done that to anyone, regardless, because she really likes you guys."
The next set of prospective parents was even worse. The woman had terrible breath, and Janie plugged her nose every time she came near her. Her husband had shifty eyes, and I didn't trust anyone who had trouble with eye contact. I stepped out to call Piper like I'd done before.
"Where do you find these people?" I asked.
I expected her to laugh again, but there was silence on the other end. It was a few more beats before she spoke.
"I think you need to lower your standards for parents."
I was taken aback.
"What do you mean? Neither of these couples was a good fit for her. It was obvious immediately. They had no clue how to interact with her."
"You've seen two of the best sets of parents we have."
"You're kidding, right?"
"Nope." This time the silence came from me.
"What if I said we were thinking about becoming her permanent foster parents?"
It wasn't exactly true. I hadn't even considered it until I blurted it out, but I realized as soon as I did that I meant it.
I wanted to be her dad. What if she was the child we'd been waiting for all along? Maybe this was the reason things had worked out the way they did.
16. Hannah Bauer. I gripped the edge of my seat and glared at Christopher. Are you serious? How could you? How could you possibly make that huge of a decision without asking me first? His eyes widened in shock. I didn't. I just... Spit it out. What? What were you thinking when you told Piper we wanted to keep Janie? I stood up, my chair slamming into the wall behind me. Keep your voice down, he hissed. She's going to hear you. I worked my jaw back and forth, too furious to think straight. How could you assume you knew how I felt about something like this? I watched as the realization hit him. He dropped his voice to a whisper. You don't want to keep her? He looked like he was going to cry, and Christopher rarely cried. I'd only seen him do it a handful of times in all our years together. Shame washed over me, making it hard to speak around the lump of emotions in my throat. I mean, I know it sounds silly, and I get that we'd be great parents for her, but I want a baby. I couldn't look at him. I stared at an imaginary spot on the tiled floor instead. During our infertility journey, we had agreed to stop trying once I reached 40 and accept our childless fate, because neither of us wanted to raise children when we were older. We wanted to be able to run freely after balls and play tag with bodies physically fit enough to do it, and didn't like the possibility of not being able to see our grandchildren grow up. We'd celebrated my 41st birthday this past year and decided we'd stretch our limit to 43. Janie was going to take years of work to stabilize. There was just no way to make it work. He waited a few minutes before speaking. I understand that you want a baby, and I've always felt the same way. But I think we need to really think about this before we say no to it. For years, all we've wanted is a baby. It's consumed us. And now? He lifted my head up with his fingers so I would look him in the eye. It's like the universe had a special plan all along and just dropped her in our lap. You don't feel that at all? I do. Every part of me wanted to help her, to give her a perfect home and wash all her pain away. But adopting her meant giving up my dream. I would have to say goodbye to the possibility of ever having a baby to hold in my arms. I'd already let go of carrying a baby and having one that was our biological child. Could I give up another piece of my heart? I didn't know if I could. I wanted the tiny fist wrapped around my fingers and the new baby smell. I longed for the experience of cuddling my child against my chest as I fed him or her, and the joy of every first. What about the father? I asked, grasping at straws. There's no record of a father on her birth certificate. I already know that. That's not what I'm talking about. Her father is somewhere out there, and we know nothing about the guy. What if it was him? What if he comes back for her? Her dad isn't coming back for her. He probably doesn't even know she exists. You don't know that. What if years down the road he decides that he wants her and comes looking for her? The only way I can do this with Janie right now is because it's temporary, so I don't allow myself to get attached like it's permanent. But if I thought we'd be her forever parents, everything would be different. Everything. My voice cracked. He took a strand of my hair and tucked it behind my ear. Concern was written all over his face. I understand your fears. All of them. Look, it's been a really long day. Super emotional. Let's just give it a rest for the night and not make any big decisions, okay? He rubbed my cheek with the back of his hand. Just think about it. No pressure. I'll be okay with whatever decision you make. And for the next few days, he tried to be patient. He left me alone, never even brought it up. But I knew it was eating away at him. He wanted Janie as much as I wanted a baby. And he was right. We were the perfect parents for her. I couldn't argue with him about that. She was going to need ongoing medical care for a long time, and no one could manage it better. Social services wouldn't find a better match. I grieved the loss of my faceless babies. I did it alone, because Christopher didn't understand. It wasn't his fault. No man understood what it was like for a woman not to have a baby to hold. I didn't like to cry in front of other people, so the shower had always been my sanctuary. I'd spent hours crying in it after my miscarriages, and it wasn't any different now. I let the torrent of sobs rip through me as the water pounded against my bare flesh, turned up so hot it left red marks on my body when I was done, like I'd broken out in a bad case of hives. I brought it up the following night, since Christopher grew more anxious with each passing day, even though he still hadn't mentioned it again. I couldn't stop thinking about adopting Janie either. It was the first thing on my mind when I woke up, and the last thing I thought about before I went to bed. I waited until Janie was engrossed in a movie so we could sneak into the kitchen without her noticing our absence. She hated being alone, especially at night. I took a seat on one of the bar stools, and Christopher quickly did the same, knowing we only had limited time before Janie lost interest in whatever was playing on the screen. She'd been with us for almost 2 weeks and hadn't made it through a full movie yet. "I'm ready to talk about adopting Janie again," I said, not wasting any time. His face lit up. He was bursting to say something but held himself back, letting me go first. "Being Janie's emergency foster care placement is one thing, but becoming her parents is entirely different. Our whole life is going to be disrupted, and I'm not sure you've given thought to all the problems she's going to have. Look at what we've already seen, and I'm sure that's only the beginning." I took a deep breath, choosing my words carefully. "Sometimes I think you let your emotions with Janie cloud your thinking, and I just want to make sure you're thinking about this rationally." He jumped in as soon as I paused. "Of course she's going to have problems, but that's exactly why she'd be such a great fit for us. We have the time and the resources to help her in ways nobody else probably can. Any new family would be up against a steep learning curve trying to figure out her medical issues, but I've been on her case from day one and followed every piece. We'd be able to make sure everything got followed up on and nothing was missed. It'd be a seamless transition for her services. Plus, she would have our undivided attention because she wouldn't be in a foster home with other kids running around.
But what about her emotional issues? We have no idea how child abuse syndrome plays out over time. Piper said her case is one of the worst that she's ever seen.
I don't expect her to be able to function like a regular kid any more than you do. It's going to take time, but think about it, Hannah. She's still so young and has so much time to heal. There's going to be a ton of work initially, but there might come a day when she's totally normal.
I raised my eyebrows. Do you really think she could be normal? Christopher reached over and took both my hands in his.
I do. Look at how well she's done in such a short period of time, with only a little bit of love and attention. Imagine what she could do in a real home with two parents who loved her and were willing to do whatever they could do to support her. We could take our family leave time like we planned to do when we got a baby and put all our focus on helping her adapt and adjust.
It made sense,
And there was something beautifully poetic about it. That wasn't lost on me. But my heart still ached. I don't know, Christopher. How is this any different than what we talked about with the foster-to-adopt kids? We'd spent most of our evenings this past year cuddled up next to each other on the couch with our laptops open, flipping through hundreds of pictures of kids and reading their stories. I'd had no idea there were so many kids up for adoption. There were kids who had been in foster care for years, sibling groups begging to stay together and not be separated. Other children with severe physical disabilities or who had been abandoned. No matter what their stories, they had one thing in common. All of them were searching for their forever families, and their stories were heart-wrenching. Kids in foster care came with a host of problems that we didn't want to deal with. Most of the kids were drug addicted or exposed, had been medically neglected, or had pretty significant disabilities. We didn't want to be saviors. We just wanted to be parents. But we never met any of those kids. Maybe if we had, we would have felt differently. Maybe, I said, but I wasn't convinced. The closer I got to saying yes, the further away my dreams of a baby went. Have you even considered the danger we are putting ourselves in if we become her parents? We don't even know what happened to her. Isn't it a huge risk if someone comes back? Do you want to always be looking over your shoulder? Are you ready for all that? He nodded. Of course I've thought about all of that, and yes, I'm willing to take the risk. Even if it means putting me in danger? It came out without thinking. I was desperate. He balked with offense. I quickly added, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. I would never knowingly put you in danger, Hannah, he said, swallowing his anger to avoid a fight. If I really thought someone was going to come after Janie again or do something to hurt you, I wouldn't consider it. But I don't think that's the case. I've always believed the police are going to catch whoever did this to her and put them away. I still think that. They just haven't found the person yet. That's all.
It might not be that simple. I sighed. Janie giggled from the living room, and my heart flooded with warmth like it did each time she laughed or enjoyed something. I couldn't deny how much she already meant to me. I need more time to think about it.
He jumped up from his chair and stood in front of me. Hannah, that's just it. We don't have time. They've already scheduled another family to come meet with Janie on Tuesday. And they have another one on the calendar for next week if that one doesn't work out. What if this is our chance to have a beautiful family and we never get another one?
Can you at least give me a few more days? I asked.
He nodded, searching my face to see if his argument had moved me. I struggled to keep my face natural and maintain my composure.
I'm going to take a shower, I said.
I headed to our bathroom before he could say anything else and turned on the shower. I couldn't hold my tears back any longer, and they slid down both cheeks as the room filled with steam. I stepped inside, sliding the glass door shut behind me. I had never met a child who needed a home more than Janie. There wasn't a kid in any of the profiles Christopher and I had looked at who needed love more than her. I knew what I had to do, what I wanted to do. But it didn't make the pain of what I was giving up any less. I had told Christopher to take Janie for a walk until I texted him to come back home. He'd looked at me strangely but had gone without question. I'd been rushing around the house trying to get everything set up as quickly as I could ever since. I decorated the living room with balloons and draped a banner over the fireplace that read, "Congratulations, it's a girl." I ordered our favorite sesame chicken and set it on the dining room table. I placed a fresh bouquet of daisies in our best vase in the center of the table. It was perfect. I texted Christopher, "You can come home now." I flung open the door when I saw them walking up the sidewalk. Christopher was giving Janie a piggyback ride. "Hi, guys. I missed you," I said.
"Been like this for the last 10 blocks, Christopher said. He was trying to pretend he was annoyed to be carrying Janie, but his eyes smiled.
I took Christopher by his arm and led him to the living room. He scanned the room, taking it all in. It took a second for the words on the banner to register. His eyes grew huge.
"Are you serious?"
he asked. He set Janie down on the floor. She looked around curiously at all the balloons and eyed the banner, trying to decipher the letters. I nodded. "I am." He threw his arms around me and lifted me off my feet, twirling me around as he shrieked with laughter.
"Really? This is so amazing. We're finally going to be parents."
I smiled as he danced me through the living room. It was just like I'd imagined he'd react when I showed him a pregnancy stick with 2 red lines in the window. Maybe this wouldn't be as different as I'd thought. He cupped my face in his hands and kissed me slowly.
"I can't believe we're doing this."
I leaned into him, his arms encircling me.
"Me either."
Case number 5243. Interview, Piper Goldstein. It had taken me over 3 months to grow my nails out beautifully, and only a few minutes to chew them back down to nubs. It was so nerve-wracking. Why did they insist on asking me questions that they already knew the answers to? I took a deep breath, hoping I'd give them what they needed this time. I did a home visit with them the day after their hospital visit. "Which hospital visit?" Ron asked. "The first one," I said. Janie had gotten into the bathroom during her 3rd week with the Bowers and swallowed a bunch of shampoo. They'd pumped her stomach and kept her overnight for observation. And yes, I did suggest respite care then, because I was shocked at how tired Christopher and Hannah looked. Respite care was a break for foster parents. Another foster family took your child for the weekend so you could rest. It would have been horrible for Janie, but I had considered it because the two of them had looked awful. They hadn't even looked like the same people. Christopher had been bleary-eyed and unshaven. His clothes had been wrinkled and unkempt, like he might have slept in them the night before, which was completely out of character for him. He had always looked like he'd just stepped off the golf course, with his polo shirts tucked into his pressed khaki pants. He had sat slumped in the upholstered chair next to the fireplace in the living room. Hannah hadn't looked any better. She had bustled around the living room with frenetic energy, like if she stopped moving, she might fall asleep on her feet. There had been heavy black creases under her eyes.
"And they refused respite care?" Ron asked.
I didn't like his tone. "Lots of family don't use respite care, but I always offer it," I said. We sat down and had a discussion about learning to take care of themselves and developing a support network for all the challenges that would present themselves as time went on. Janie had an entire team helping her with her issues, but they didn't have anyone. Lots of parents forget about themselves.
"What sort of things did you discuss?"
They'd been keeping themselves fairly isolated inside the house. I stressed the importance of getting their family and other trusted people involved so they could help caring for Janie. When you're dealing with an emotionally troubled child, it gives a whole new meaning to "it takes a village to raise a child."
"I imagine."
Luke's expression was blank.
"Why were the Bowers so set on keeping Janie away from their family?"
Why did they make everything sound so bad and ill-intentioned? I tried to keep the annoyance out of my voice. It wasn't like that. Christopher had read all these books on how to make adoptive children feel comfortable and settled in their 1st month.
He and Hannah had taken time off from work so they could both be home with her during her first month. Lots of the experts said it was best to keep the number of new people to a minimum and to work on developing the parent-child relationship first before bringing other people into the circle.